It was a historic achievement watching Congress pass federal health care reform 5 years ago. And historic can mean either good or bad, depending on your own personal feelings. This much is certain. Passage of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, was far from the end of the discussion. It's been routinely attacked in Congress and the courts by the people who thought it went too far. And it's still a sore spot for people who think the health care system can do more for Americans. Our first guest tells a story of healthcare and its costs on stage. Michael Milligan is an actor, playwright, producer, and more. His one-man show, Mercy Killers, comes to Springfield on Sunday and Eugene on September 25th. He joins us by phone from Chicago. Michael, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Tell us a bit about you. You've been working in theater for quite some time now, it appears.
Yeah. I've taken over the family business, I like to say. My mom was a storyteller when I was a kid growing up. She would travel around telling stories at libraries and in elementary schools. And so oftentimes she'd pull me out of school and I'd go along with her. So I actually worked with her for a year after I finished school and I really love the art of storytelling. And then I went on to Juilliard, and studied drama there and have been a professional actor ever since.
I notice you've got a fair amount of Shakespeare work under your belt, which raises the question, how have you not worked at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival right in the heart of our region?
I don't know. Do you know anybody there?
Just a few people, yeah. All right, we'll work on that one for a minute.
I've had a lot of friends work there. I know it's a wonderful place. I'd love to go there sometime.
All right, we haven't set Mercy Killers up that much yet. It is a one-man show, and you have some experience with one-man shows previously. Is that a fairly tough genre to do?
It depends on if you get along with your castmate.
Which we presume you do.
And we have a good working relationship, yes. Mm-hmm. Me with myself. But it is very interesting, especially as the writer and the actor. It's definitely a kind of collaboration because, as a writer, you think very differently than as an actor. I would say that the play really matured once I started to perform it. And what I found was, as I started to perform it and invested more in the reality of the character, I would give myself the freedom to improvise, in the moment, around the circumstances of the play. And it was almost as if the character was rebelling against the script at points, when things seemed inauthentic. That kind of freedom to continually adapt and revise the play through improvisation, I think has really been exciting for me and gives the play a kind of authenticity and reality that I often find missing.
So what, Michael, led to your creation of Mercy Killers?
Well, writing is an interesting thing. As a writer, you feel like everything is deeply, deeply personal and that you're exposing yourself through your writing. But really, it's you draw on things from your own life, but they're sort of disguised in imaginary situations and circumstances. But for me, I had a pretty good run when I finished drama school and worked pretty consistently. So the question of healthcare and health insurance, I was completely unaware of it. I got my insurance through the Actors Union, because I was lucky to be employed. It wasn't a problem for me, but I was in a relationship with someone, she's an artist as well, and she had a lot of medical needs, and those began to, consume our income and all of our efforts to just get her medical needs addressed and stay afloat and, you know, pay rent and food and stuff like that. And that came to me as a big surprise, you know, that, oh, this is what it's like for someone to sort of make all their life decisions based around making sure that they have access to healthcare. And that time coincided with Occupy Wall Street, actually. And I lived not too far from there. So one day, after watching it on the news for a while, I walked down to Zuccotti Park and saw all these other people who, it's very different from what, you know, you might have seen on the news. The news, I mean, the camera tends to focus in on, you know, radical-looking people. But for the most part, it was just people who were hit hard by the financial crisis and the recession and needed to go somewhere and express, you know, the struggle that they were going through. And so when I went down there and saw all these other people and started talking to people, I realized the extent to which the previous several years I had just been treading water, that we had just been treading water trying to stay afloat. And it made me think about how that's something tragic and ironic about our relationship to the healthcare system, is people don't know what it's like until it's too late, until they're in a situation that is out of their control. And then all of their energy, all of their focus just becomes about the desperate struggle to either access care or stay in your house or, you know, any number of scenarios. And it's tragic because it's at that moment that we actually need to reach out as a community, because it's really only as a community that we'll be able to really address the problems with the healthcare system.
Michael Milligan.
Yeah.
I was just going to give the reintroduction here to let people know. We're talking to Michael Milligan here on the Jefferson Exchange. He's an actor and playwright and the creator of the one-man show and performer of it, Mercy Killers, coming to Springfield on Sunday the 20th and Eugene on September 25th. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about healthcare and healthcare reform and what it has or has not done to make the world a better place. 800-838-3760 by phone around the region, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So was it a fairly quick thing? I mean, you came back from Zuccotti Park and began pounding out the script for Mercy Killers?
Well, there were two more things that happened. Another, my friend from school was homeless for a while, and he showed up at the stage door one night. And he had a number of medical problems, and I sort of took it on myself to try to help him get in to see a doctor. And that was mind-blowing, too, how difficult that was. And that raised a question for me of, you know, your friend shows up in need, and so you want to help. But at the same time, you feel like, oh my God, if I take on this problem, it's going to sink me too. You know, there's that old adage, you can't rescue a drowning man, you know, when you're just trying to stay afloat. And so that made me question, you know, why is this all on my shoulders, right? Why am I the one who has to take on my friend's problems when I'm insufficient to the task? Yeah. And that paradox kind of broke my heart a little bit. And then the final thing that happened was I had a 3-month gap in my insurance for the first time since I finished school. And 3 weeks into it, I started passing kidney stones in the middle of a play reading. And it actually worked pretty good because it was a very dramatic piece.
You used it.
although I think I was offered the part, but I think the director was disappointed later on when I wasn't passing kidney stones. But I'd excused myself and I left and I went home and I did what a lot of Americans do. I consulted my personal concierge doctor, which is WebMD.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I put in my symptoms and what I was feeling, and it came. And WebMD always diagnoses you with something much more dire than so I thought I was having kidney failure, and then I did the next American thing, which is to Google how much is it going to cost me to go to the emergency room, right? And what it came back at as was somewhere around $8,000, which was about as much money as I had in the world. And so I did the responsible thing, which is the cost-benefit analysis, right? And so I said, oh, kidney stones, let's see, 5% chance mortality if left untreated in 2 to 3 days, or 100% chance of $8,000. So I stayed home and took Advil and Tylenol and passed the kidney stones.
Whew, painful and, couple of days, though.
Very painful. And what that experience taught me was, you know, in addition to real physical pain that of an illness, there's an equal portion of existential and emotional turmoil of the feeling of not knowing where you're going to get care or how, or a real feeling of isolation. And, you know, thankfully, my, you know, kidney stones is not a serious condition. It's very painful, but it made me think, God, what is it like for people who have something much more serious, that's ongoing, and their life can become completely about this struggle just to continue to access care. And so that's when it really clicked for me. I thought, I have to get involved with this. And I tried standing on the corner with a petition, you know, for that the organization I was working with, you know, to get people to sign a petition. And I'm just terrible at that. You know, people think that actors are people who can get up in public and say anything, but I cannot do that unless it's through a character, you know. So I thought, I think it will be better if I write a play and perform it, and then at the end of the play, ask people to sign my petition, you know. So that's what I did. I wrote Mercy Killers, and I've been performing it ever since around the country. I took it to Scotland, the Edinburgh Festival, which is the largest theater festival in the world, and the piece won something called the Fringe First Award, which is an award that goes to the top new writing. So that was a big surprise. I didn't expect that. The reception that the play got in Scotland. But they were very, very sympathetic towards the piece, as the Scottish were sort of experiencing the rollout of austerity measures from UK, mm-hmm. UK Parliament. So they saw the piece and I remember there was some introduction of a proposal to add like a 7-pound charge to prescription drugs if people went to the doctor and needed drugs. 7 pounds. And they were, you know, the whole populace was active around it and enraged that they wouldn't have access for everybody. Mm-hmm. That there would even be 7. Can you imagine that?
It's like 12 to 15 pounds. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
$12. That's it. But they, you know, they have such a belief that healthcare is a human right for all their citizens that was outrageous to them. So they saw the piece and they really recognized, see, this is where this would be heading for us if we dismantle the NHS and privatize everything. So it was a really interesting experience. I think the most interesting thing for me was, at the festival, you have people from all over Europe who come, as well as Americans. And people would stay after the show, so I would talk to Germans, French people, Scottish people, English people, from all over. And from their feedback, I really understood that my play is not a universal human experience. It's an American experience. And
as American as apple pie, as the ad puts it.
Yeah, but you know, we think that, oh, this is just a natural part of human life, that if you You know, if you don't have health insurance or you don't have the money, then you lose the game, basically. And that's not something that is in the, you know, the consciousness of people in countries where they have universal health care.
Michael Milligan is again our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, actor, playwright, producer, and more. His one-man show, Mercy Killers, will be showing this Sunday, September 20th at 2 at the Wildish Theater in Springfield, and the following Friday, September 25th at the Very Little Theater in Eugene. You can join our discussion about healthcare and its cross-reference with theater here on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. I noticed one of the sponsors on your Oregon Swing is Healthcare for All Oregon, which favors a publicly funded healthcare system. I have to believe that similar organizations bring you in all over the country.
I just did a tour with a group called Healthcare for All Texas, which was a fantastic experience. Also, I work a lot with a group called Physicians for National Health Program, National Nurses United. But that said, you know, I mean, these organizations do have a particular political bent around this issue. But my experience in Texas was people who are from the other side of the spectrum, they also deeply enjoy the peace and recognize the truth in the story, in the plight of this, of the character. They just have a different, you know, take on what the solution is. But what I think that the play does is it humanizes the issue. It humanizes, you know, the statistics and the bullet points that people refer to in the discussion about healthcare, so that I think that when people see the play later on, then when they talk about healthcare, there's a stronger connection, a stronger memory to the fact that, oh, we're talking about human beings here. So if we disagree on policy, that's one thing, but let us not forget that we are talking about real human beings, you know.
And do you advocate for a single-payer healthcare system or a public option, or is anything specifically advocated in Mercy Killers?
No, not at all. It's just the story of the man's, you know, one man's struggle with the system and also with his own worldview.
I would think you'd be pretty well spent after the after a single person performance, but apparently you do stick around for audience discussions after the show, and you mentioned some of the stuff you've heard in Texas, and so you're hearing from a bunch of different viewpoints along the way, some of which must be really illuminating to you. Have they had you tweak the work at all for that reason?
Ooh.
Have you decided to tweak the work based on some of the feedback you've gotten?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Early on, you know, I often collaborate with doctors and nurses, and so early on, people give me feedback about experience, you know, their real experience on the front lines, and so some of that stuff would make its way into the script. Hmm. But this is just an example of a couple of interesting conversations that have arisen with different kinds of people in the audience. This guy, I was in Texas and I needed to get my hair cut. So I was at this Latino grocery store in Fort Worth. And this guy had a barber shop set up in the grocery store. His name was Straight Razor Steve. And he had a jar, you know, on the windowsill. This is tip jar. It says Obamacare Penalty Fund. Obamacare penalty relief fund or something like that. Uh-huh. So I was like, oh, I got to go and get my hair cut in there, you know, see what this is all about. So this is a really interesting guy, you know. I would say he's kind of a libertarian, which is what my character in the play is. He's kind of a libertarian. And so he's cutting my hair and, you know, I asked him about the jar and he goes, yeah, you know, I couldn't afford health insurance before Obamacare, and I still can't afford, you know, if I get the whatever plan that I could afford, I still wouldn't be able to pay for my doctor visits because the deductible is so high, and you know, so he doesn't have it. So he just goes to a clinic in the neighborhood that has a sliding scale. And so I asked him, you know, he's cutting my hair for a while. So I say, well, what's the solution? You know, what would your solution be? And he says, I don't know, but I don't think government has the solution, you know. And he's cutting my hair for a little while longer. And then he says, but did you ever see that Michael Moore movie?
Uh-huh.
Sicko? I said, yeah, I saw that. He says, well, I thought it was interesting when they went down to Cuba. It seems like that system worked pretty good. So there are these kind of ironies, tragic ironies that we have as Americans, you know, mm-hmm. in sort of these inner contradictions, it's happened so many times where, you know, some guy, an older guy will be talking about how he doesn't like government interference in healthcare, and then you find out, you know, he's on Medicare.
Yeah, like the people held the signs that said, "Keep your government hands off my Medicare." Yeah.
Yeah, but that's real. It's not made up. People really have that. Another really interesting one was at my talk back, I had on my panel the former head of the Cleveland Teachers Union and a lifelong auto worker who were presenting about single payer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this guy raises his hand in the audience and he says, you know, he introduces himself as ultra conservative, and he was a lifelong military guy, and his wife is the CEO of a company. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Quickly.
And he says,
I'll tell you what, Michael, we're going to have to finish this story some other time. People have to go to Mercy Killers to find out. Again, Mercy Killers on the 20th in Springfield, on the 25th in Eugene. Michael Milligan is the actor and performer. Thanks so much for joining us in the exchange today.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care.